Okay.
Okay, you're good to go.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so we just read that slide and I'll just leave that up for a moment. Okay, and just a little bit about me. I'm not gonna spend too much time on this. Most of you know me already. I've been at Brock since 1988 and really haven't left. And I'm kind of proud of that actually. I've been an instructor here, a TA, currently teaching in Interactive Arts and Sciences. I'm the outreach officer and also part of the equity committee. And I've been collaborating and working with the Indigenous community in various capacity over the last 8 years. And I wanted to share my first story with what introduced me to the actual lived experiences of Indigenous, Métis, and Inuit was with Dr. Rebecca Raby, intro to Soch. And at that time, Rebecca was a Unit 1 instructor. And that is where, for the first time, I learned about Indigenous genocide in residential schools in Canada. And I have a note on there that at that time there was still a residential school open. Other professors in the department, like Walt Watson, I'm sure some of you might remember, also provided accurate accounts and analyses of Canada's dark history with Indigenous people. So from those courses, you know, wanting to what can we do and how can we do and what does that look like? And as a settler, what does that look like? What does it mean to be an ally? What does it mean to be an accomplice? What does it mean to be a co-resister? So I'll ask you to think about where you might fall in the spectrum between ally, accomplice, and co-resister, and how you might incorporate some of these practices into your own classrooms. And just to throw in a little bit of trivia, just down the street from Brock used to be the Shenonten village, which was there in the early 1600s. It was discovered in the early 70s while building the subdivision. And the original village was said to include 25 longhouses and had a population of about 1200 peoples. So not something that people know about or think about, and excuse me, it is important to learn the history of the land that we're occupying at this time. So here is a very handy website that will give you a sense of the different people's land. All right. So today I'm talking about the indigenization of post-secondary education. And some of this material is coming from QP National, from the website. I've included the link to the PDF file here. So what is it? Indigenization of post-secondary education is the practice of acknowledging and redressing the ways in which Indigenous peoples, their scholarship, history, culture, and ways of knowing have been excluded from or made invisible within post-secondary institutions and post-secondary education. And I'll also add the stories that were told and what is taught is incorrect. So we know that this process recognizes that we all play a role in reconciliation with Indigenous peoples. So while indigenization needs to take place across the post-secondary sector, this work is also highly local. These practices at our university level, which is what I want to talk about today, should embrace local Indigenous nations and communities, as well as the nations represented among staff and the student body. So one of the questions I wanted to ask is, what role do academic labor unions play in reconciliation with Indigenous, Métis, and Inuit peoples? So here are some examples of what it might look like in practice. So hiring, promotions and tenure, recruitment and admissions, curriculum development, teaching and learning, research, support services, leadership and administration, campus and community spaces. And some of this is done via collective bargaining and different union practices. So this also comes from the PDF fact sheet below. There's a lot more detail in that, which I'll also send out. And the links, two links at the bottom of the slide, giving you some insight with what BUFA has been doing in this respect. So how does this relate to us? How can QP4207 members incorporate these calls to action? So for us, I've highlighted, you know, areas that we can contribute and work on. I mean, we don't play a role in hiring, promotions, and tenure, but sometimes we do sit on different committees when we work in departments. So those are the three areas that I kind of want to look at in more detail. So what are we doing as a union? With respect to support services, we provide resources and network support services for Indigenous peoples, both in the community and outside of it. We've donated money or resources, supplies such as gas and propane to various organizations that can offer on-site help. We also provide time and space for traditional Indigenous practices and events on campus, and that's through the Equity Committee. With respect to campus and community spaces, we provide a safe union office space and virtual space for Indigenous members, and we have various coalitions with groups and organizations that support the Indigenous community. So specifically looking at curriculum, teaching and learning as instructors, we can do things with our syllabus, and I'm gonna get into these a little bit more detail shortly. Lecture material, assignments, student engagement, and as TAs and lab demonstrators, you're also able to contribute to this learning process. So in your seminars, lab demonstrations, and office spaces. So a nice picture there of the experiential learning cycle, the reflecting and the meaning making, I think is key. And that's very easy to bring in some disciplines for sure, maybe a bit more challenging in others, but let's give it a go. So with respect to the syllabus, including the recognition of territory statements, so these are some of the things that I've incorporated into my courses, assigning readings with Indigenous authors or focus, and then consider varied pedagogical approaches, right? So thinking about epistemology and ontology, you know, how do we know what we know? Indigenous ways of learning, of being and knowing and teaching. I missed a comma. Course material. So lecture material that speaks to lived experiences, both positive and negative. And I say that here because we want to be mindful not to reproduce stereotypes of Indigenous people. And if we focus on negative, then we don't see possibilities and capabilities. So we can have assignments that unpack issues and challenges for Indigenous peoples within the context of the course or the topic of the department, and include Indigenous scholars and community members for guest speakers, and being mindful to not make it feel like tokenism. If you can, if you're comfortable, ask your department if there's any honorarium available for Indigenous speakers, being mindful not to ask for free labor. And there's a link at the bottom to Brock's experiential education. And I've chatted with folks there and they have some interesting ideas for experiential education that really fit with Indigenous ways of learning and so forth. So TAs and instructors and lab demonstrators. So in your seminars, you can also bring in Indigenous focused material into the discussions, right? So maybe examples of concepts or a way of applying your concepts, your theories, your themes, and so forth. And again, considering those different ways of learning. Student engagement. So think about your office space, you know, making safe spaces available, how we interact with students. And I think, hello? Oh, okay. Sorry. I think from a Western perspective, we would call this a holistic approach, but taking the time to listen to students and holding space for them. I don't want to advocate for too much emotional labor either. However, sometimes we can really get caught up in academia and forget that people have, you know, lives and stuff going on. So providing some flexibility for lateness. So in some respects, we've been a bit more flexible in the last year with student challenges. So being mindful of what's going on in the Indigenous community. And there might be times when your Indigenous students or your TAs might need more time to complete some things given what's happening in the community. And just a reminder for everybody to mute themselves, please. So some of my examples, this example, the students just love this. It talks about broadband Broadband Bruce. And so here, because I work with digital technologies, my focus is often about digital divides and looking at who doesn't have access. So it's a video that talks about how this young fellow decided that he was going to get his own internet in a very remote space. Anyway, I recommend clicking on it and watching it when you have time and reading about it. But I like this example because it shows lived experiences and existing challenges. It also shows creativity and capabilities, possibilities, okay? And it helps students tackle and unpack the digital divide within an Indigenous community, critical reflection upon problems and resolutions locally and systemically. And another example I like to use with respect to gaming and digital narratives and how, you know, we can use gaming or other types of virtual platforms to pass on generational knowledge and even language retention. So there's some really amazing ways that we can highlight that. These are just some examples from my reading list this year for my course. You'll notice the range of journals that that these pieces come from. Sometimes you have to be a bit creative with your with how you search, the words that you search. Exchanging Indigenous, Aboriginal, First Nations, all sorts of different ways. But there's, you know, really cool research being done out there. And I'd really like to highlight that. So I reached out to the librarians, and Jennifer Thiessen is the liaison for Indigenous Studies. And John Dingle also helped me, kind of put something together for you. And Jennifer, of course, is available if you do have ideas for your seminar, your labs, or your course that you're not quite sure, you know, how you can effectively incorporate Indigenous content. There's lots here for you and some digital media here as well. All right. So with respect to what's happening in CUPE land, all right, so we have the Indigenous Council for CUPE Ontario, and then there's a link there as well to CUPE National Indigenous Council. Lots of resources on their sites available to all CUPE members, so be sure to have a look. And other resources coming from our both CUPE Ontario and CUPE National to give you some more ideas and insights into what this might look like for you. These are all active links. And that's what I wanted to share with you today. So I think that we definitely have opportunity both as instructors and course coordinators, TAs, lab demonstrators, all of it, to really take the time and think about what that might look like in your classroom space, within your pedagogical framework. And yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening.